Hello, and welcome to Conversations from the World of Allergy, a podcast produced by the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. I'm your host, Dave Stukas. I'm a board-certified allergist and immunologist and serve as a social media medical editor for the Academy. Our podcast series will use different formats to interview thought leaders in the world of allergy and immunology. This podcast is not intended to provide any individual medical advice to our listeners. We do hope that our conversations provide evidence-based information. Any questions pertaining to one's own health should always be discussed with their personal physician. The Find an Allergist search engine on the Academy website is a useful tool to locate a listing of board-certified allergists in your area. Finally, use of this audio program is subject to the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology Terms of Use Agreement, which you can find at www.aaai.org. Today's edition of our Conversations from the World of Allergy podcast series is targeted towards both healthcare professionals as well as the general public, and this is really exciting information that we're going to discuss today. We are very excited to welcome our guest, Dr. Lawrence Frankel. Dr. Frankel is a professor of pediatrics in the Division of Allergy, Immunology, and Infectious Diseases at the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Rockford. Dr. Frankel is an infectious disease and vaccine expert who also happens to be an immunologist. Throughout his long career, he's devoted his time to clinical care, research, advocacy, and service in many professional and advocacy organizations. And today, we're all going to learn from him as we discuss the exciting new RSV vaccine and other treatment options. Dr. Frankel, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, and you are more than welcome.
Yeah, this is, you know, I as a pediatrician who did my residency training more than 20 years ago, RSV, oh boy, that has been, it's been, you know, something that's impacted the patients for a long, long time. So we're going to dive into some of these details. But before we do that, I always like to start by learning more about our guests. And you've been an infectious disease specialist for several decades. What's been the most rewarding aspect of working in this area for you personally? And what's kept your interest for so long?
Well, you know, infectious disease and immunology and allergy are very challenging disciplines and very rewarding disciplines, both in terms of the rapid advances over the past decades and also in terms of how often you can help your patients in a definitive fashion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Have you found that the pace of our understanding of new evidence, do you think that it's just is getting faster and faster as time goes by?
Yes. I won't say it's impossible to keep up with it, but it takes effort. The advances are very quick. You really have to, you know, search the literature and keep up with the literature.
No, absolutely. And, you know, with one of the most devastating global pandemics in recent history fresh on our minds, many people are much more aware of viruses, viral transmission, et cetera. So I think that those are some concepts that are familiar to folks. And RSV has been a part of our world for much longer than the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Can you tell us what RSV stands for and some of the unique features of this virus when it infects humans?
Sure. It's called the respiratory syncytial virus. And it's only recently, well, they tried making a vaccine in the 1960s at the Children's Hospital of Washington, D.C. And unfortunately, the vaccine in some recipients caused mortality and because it was more severe disease manifestations.
And so we're going to talk more about some of the more recent vaccine trials, but what happens? So does this something that infects the upper respiratory tract, the lower respiratory tract? Does it cause systemic illness? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, it does all three, as a matter of fact. It does cause upper respiratory tract symptoms such as runny nose and coughing, and it causes systemic symptoms in terms of fever, and especially its lung effects, respiratory distress, difficulty breathing, even necessitating hospitalization for treatment, and sometimes ventilatory assistance.
Mm. And how does this virus typically spread from one person to another?
Well, that's an interesting question. From the upper respiratory tract, you know, sneezing and coughing can spread it from one person to another. That's probably the most common, but also can be spread by fomites, especially children, getting their secretions onto things, and then their parents or other people pick up the objects and then touch their nose. It's pretty easily spread.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a sense of, we got used to this term R naught during the pandemic and with measles, and, you know, referring to how many other people one person infected with a disease can spread it to. Do we have an idea of the R naught of RSV?
Well, I don't know what it is offhand, but I think it's pretty high.
Mm-hmm. So it's very infectious.
Yes.
Yeah. And does this circulate every year? And if so, is there some predictable pattern based upon location? Is this more of a winter virus, a summer virus?
Well, in temperate climates, it's pretty straightforward that it's a late fall, winter, and early spring virus. And that's almost occurs every year, that pattern.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned before my own background in pediatrics, and I'll never forget some of the smallest babies on the infectious disease floor in the ICU every winter, really just struggling to breathe because of this virus. But can you tell us a little bit more as to the impact that RSV has on infants and children in particular?
Well, it's one of the most common causes of hospitalization of infants and young children, and it also has significant mortality.
And what is the typical reason why children could die from this virus? Is it breathing difficulty, or are there other reasons why?
It's mostly breathing difficulty.
Okay. Well, as you know,
and pneumonia, including pneumonia and bronchiolitis type symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And allergists and immunologists have had a particular interest in the connection with early life severe RSV infection and subsequent development of asthma. Can you explain this a little bit further? I've heard some different chicken and egg arguments that RSV causes asthma versus those predisposed to have asthma get more severe illness when infected with RSV. Are either of these correct? Do we know any more?
Well, that's an interesting question. And I don't think we know all the answers. Clearly, if a infant is going to manifest asthma later in life, having RSV will cause early evidence and early manifestations of their tendency for asthma. We really don't know if the RSV episode changes the airway in terms of response to assaults and other viruses and other allergens. That's not been completely worked out. The data aren't completely clear about whether RSV causes asthma or whether in infants or children who have underlying predisposition to asthma, it just manifests itself when RSV infections occur.
Mm-hmm. And certainly we all, have seen patients who have developed severe RSV and never have asthma and vice versa.
That's correct. And the percentage is not very high of the provocation of asthma with RSV. It's in the range of 25% to 30%.
Okay, so part of the picture, but not the complete story by any means.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what about the elderly population? Are they also at increased risk for more severe illness from this virus?
Yes. Clearly, individuals over 60 or 65 have a higher mortality rate, have a higher hospitalization rate, need artificial support for their respirations. It is clear now that elderly people can manifest the disease symptoms as often as children.
Mm. And aside from these extremes of age being a risk factor for more severe illness caused by RSV infection, are there other health conditions that may pose increased risk? And can you tell us about some of those?
Yes, clearly. Almost any ongoing symptomatic disease is a risk factor. And the following conditions seem to peak or manifest themselves more often. If you have underlying asthma, you'll have more severe asthma disease. And this is generally as an adult. Diabetes, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, congestive heart failure, liver, kidney, cardiac, and immune disease. They're all better represented or more represented in patients, older patients, that manifest the need for hospitalization.
So far you've described to me a virus that's ubiquitous in our world, that circulates pretty much every year, essentially infects everybody, and there are risk factors both on extremes of age as well as those with chronic health conditions. hopefully we're going to get to some good news pretty soon.
But, I'm sure you lost that sentence.
I said, hopefully we'll get to some good news pretty soon in our conversation. But
gotcha.
Do we have a sense of why our immunity wanes over time and why the same person can get infected over and over again by this virus?
That's an interesting question. And we really don't have all the answers on that. And it's being involved in a lot of research. You know, some viruses and bacteria, for that matter, will have more manifestations of disease and a shorter immune period. And RSV is just kind of at the peak of those. We don't know how much of this is related to the response to the virus in terms of cell-mediated immunity, or just waning general immunity. So that's an interesting problem, and I think there's a fair amount of research ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to revisit what you mentioned earlier about how RSV vaccine development goes back, oh my gosh, almost 60 years.
Right.
But up until now, we haven't had an effective vaccine. So aside from, you know, obviously issues with, you know, participants having adverse effects and mortality, what are some of the other features as to why we haven't had an effective vaccine for this until now?
Well, I think probably the most glaring reason is, and we kind of learned this from the initial studies and data from RSV vaccine trials, is that there's something called the fusion protein. And that protein is responsible for the virus attaching to a cell and causing infection and disease. And the original vaccine or vaccines that were developed did not respond to, in a protective fashion, to the fusion protein. And we learned later that there is a conformational change from the fusion protein that occurs when there is infection. And it's this conformationally changed fusion protein that allows for an effective vaccine, whereas the non-changed protein isn't associated with protection. Even a vaccine against that is not associated with protection.
Well, that's really interesting. And so is the target mainly to try to bind the virus before it attaches to cells? Is that the main focus of vaccine development thus far?
Yes, you could say that, because the fusion protein changes its form before the virus attempts to bind to a host cell. But obviously, if the fusion protein changes anywhere along the line, it leaves an opportunity for the vaccine to be effective.
This summer, the FDA approved the first two RSV vaccines. Can you tell us what types of vaccines these are and how they may differ compared to some other types of vaccines?
Let me try to make this sensible. The two recently FDA-approved RSV vaccines for adults are stabilized, conformationally altered RSV fusion protein vaccines. They should be administered intramuscularly.
And so you mentioned that they focus on that fusion protein. Do other types of vaccines we use for bacteria or other viruses, do they have a different target compared to RSV vaccines?
Most of them have different targets, yes.
Okay, so it's a very unique vaccine. And
right.
What age group is currently approved for these new vaccines? And you mentioned it should be given intramuscularly.
Yes. The two vaccines that we're talking about, they're approved for adults over 60 years of age.
Okay. And is this something that we think is going to be given annually, or is that to be determined?
I think that's to be determined. I haven't seen any data with regard to that, although okay. either it would be logical to have some concern, because even people who have RSV disease, and even serious RSV disease, lose their immunity over the course of a year or two. And so they manifest recurrent disease, even though they're vaccinated.
And when we look at vaccine clinical trials, typically there are tens of thousands of patients enrolled. Can you describe some of the basic methodology for the research surrounding these RSV vaccines, and specifically maybe what clinical outcomes that they looked at?
Well, basically what they do, the trials did enroll several thousand people, and the comparison of RSV vaccinated and placebo immunized individuals in the trials tells you whether you've got an effective vaccine, at least at time zero, and maybe for a year or two after that.
And these populations that are enrolled, are they generally followed for 6 months at a time, a year, 10 years?
No, I think it's mostly a year for the current studies.
Okay. Were there any significant adverse effects that were identified in these trials, or something that we need to specifically inform patients about prior to administration?
Yes. Individuals can have allergic reactions to the vaccine or vaccine components. Fainting is a relatively common adverse effect to these vaccines. Pain at the site of immunization, muscle pain, fainting, and headaches are reported and seen. A little bit more than we usually have to deal with in terms of most currently used vaccines.
Mm-hmm. So is there any recommendation regarding extended monitoring after administration in a healthcare facility, or just to be aware of these?
Just be aware of these.
Okay. And I don't think we specified, so just to be clear for our audience, is this a live virus vaccine that can cause the person to actually become ill, or is it an inactivated vaccine?
It's an inactivated vaccine.
Okay. Do we have any sense with the upcoming cold and flu season, can these RSV vaccines be administered at the same time as the influenza vaccine or even a COVID booster?
Good question. Multiple vaccines can be administered at the same time, but should be injected at different sites. These include RSV, COVID, and flu.
Okay. And at the time of our recording, hot off the press, I just saw that now these are going to be approved for women who are pregnant as well. Is that true?
Right. That's very true. They've been working on that study for some time. And presumably, it appears that the women will develop immune responses to the vaccine, and those can transplacentally cross to the developing fetus and protect the fetus for the first 6 months or year after birth.
That is extremely exciting. And I know this, literally, we just read about this yesterday, the day before we're recording. Do we have a sense of when that will be available for pregnant women?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, I don't either, but hopefully soon. Well, so you mentioned that for pregnant women, ideally it's going to provide protection to the baby for an extended period of time. But do we have a timeline for when RSV vaccines will be available to actually administer to infants or children?
Well, we don't have a timeline, but I don't think it's going to be too many months, at least for some of the vaccines that would be used for children and infants, older infants and children.
Okay, so even more hope on the horizon. But these vaccines were not the only exciting development this year. Can you please tell us about nirsevimib, if I pronounce that correctly, and how this monoclonal antibody can help infants and toddlers?
Yes, that's a good question and good science. We know that monoclonal antibodies given to babies can protect those babies against a number of diseases. And this is especially true in terms of respiratory syncytial virus disease. And these monoclonal antibodies, when they're given to babies, or when the parent or the mother is immunized and transports over the placenta some of the protective elements of these new vaccines, and part of them are their monoclonal antibodies, that can have protection for 6 to 8 months.
Okay, so different than a vaccine that would sort of, generate either an immune response or protect. These are actually like a passive transfer to help.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yes.
Well, a lot of us are familiar with another monoclonal antibody called palivizumab, also known as Synagis, and we've used this for years to help protect premature infants and those with underlying medical conditions at risk for more severe illness from RSV. How does the new treatment, nirsevimab, differ from that one?
It's more effective. It's a different monoclonal antibody, and it's more effective than the older antibodies that have been used, but not with enormous effect.
Okay. So it's nice to have this new, more effective option. You know, speaking of, we have great options now for infants and the elderly, and now pregnant women as well. And hopefully we're going to see a dramatic decline in severe infections in these susceptible groups. But what can you tell us about the rest of us? So what should we try to do to reduce our risk of contracting RSV and also spreading it?
Well, that's a good question. If you are in contact with someone whom you know has RSV disease, the advice is that you try to protect yourself from passage of the virus, active virus, from the sick infant, child, or older person. And sometimes you have to wear masks, protective clothing, and gloves, hand washing, and sensible infection control measures within the environment where you and the sick person or infected person are.
And if you had to sort of pick one piece of advice for the general public during especially autumn and winter months when viral transmission is at its highest, what would you recommend? Is it just wash our hands, don't touch our face? What would you pick?
Well, that's a good start. If you know someone is sick with RSV, then you should probably wear a mask if and when you have to come in contact with them. And obviously, you should use the well-known infection control techniques, which includes hand washing and sometimes gloving.
Okay. Are there any other exciting areas of research regarding RSV vaccines or other treatments that we may see in the near future?
Well, I think maybe a longer efficacy vaccine if we work out why immunity doesn't last too long. For other at-risk individuals with recurrent exposure, such as healthcare individuals, a new longer-term effective vaccine, it should be made widely available to everyone, or at least IM medications for early treatment of RSV.
Okay. Well, Dr. Frankel, we've covered a lot of ground in a short period of time, and your information it's a timely update for all of us as we head into the new, next RSV season. Are we missing anything on this topic that you'd like to discuss before we depart?
No, I think we've covered pretty much. Let's see, aerosol vaccines or antiviral aerosol medications, or effective and safe aerosol or other vaccines would be indicated if they can be developed. RSV vaccines with longer term efficacy would also be nice.
And when you say aerosol vaccines, is that something that, through a nasal spray, or is there some other way of delivering it?
Oh, yes. I mean, if we could develop an oral vaccine, that would be much appreciated. A nasal vaccine could be very effective, since that's a common mode of entry. I think those would be the two that I mentioned.
Okay. Well, Dr. Frankel, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. This is great information, very insightful. Is there anything else that you'd like to add in general before we sign off?
Just to say thank you and the AAAI for allowing me to share this information with the audience.
Well, it's our pleasure. Thank you again.
Take care.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode. Please visit www.aaai.org for show notes and any pertinent links from today's conversation. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify so you can receive new episodes in the future. Thank you again for listening.